From the land of Grand Theatre Varsity in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the fourth day of December 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzlow at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Gary Schnitke will be here with some work he's done on RP or crop insurance policies, especially as it's related to the brand new enhancements, both SEO, which you may be familiar with from last year, and ECO. That's the enhanced coverage option will be available along with crop insurance policies farmers sign up for in March. And then as we close out our time together, we'll take up the weather forecast. Eric Snodgrass will join us from Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn for the day finished at $4.20 and a half. That was down 6 cents. The May futures at $4.23 and a quarter, 5 and a half lower. And December corn at $4.10 and a quarter for next year, a half lower. January beans 5 and a quarter lower at $11.63. The March down 5 and a quarter, $11.65. And November beans 10.38 and a quarter, down 2 cents. January bean meal 4 and a half cents lower at $4.50 lower at $3.85.50 for the day. And the bean oil up 68 cents at $38.41. Soft red winter wheat 9 lower in the lead option March at $5.75 and a half, and the hard red at $5.42 and three quarters, down 7 cents for the day. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished the lead option nearby contract at $108.75 and a half. That for the day is down 72 and a half. In the December, live cattle at 116.17 and a half, 12 and a half lower in the April, and feeders at 139.77 and a half, 2 and a half cents lower. Mike Zuzulo joins us from GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas this afternoon. Hey, good afternoon to you. It's a good Friday, isn't it?
It is a good Friday. We're getting close to the big Saint Nick coming, Todd, so we all got to get excited about that.
It is December. That's good.
Hard to believe it.
Yeah, it is hard to believe. You know, this is the time where farmers really start to think about taxes. Maybe they need to make sales. Maybe they need to delay some payments coming in, all those sorts of things. And they're also watching the marketplace, I think, for the first time since harvest, really, really closely, other than when there are big up moves. And there have been some big moves this week. Of course, we've been up and now we're not. What do you see in the marketplace?
Well, the Brazil weather battle between the small spec bull and bear, and I'm thinking it's small spec at this point. We'll find out more about that when it comes to the Commitment of Traders report later today to see exactly where the funds sit. But my assessment right now is that the funds have mainly stayed long. They have not reduced many of their longs because we've seen 7-year highs in the copper, 7-year highs in iron ore, 3-year highs in some of the other key commodities, and a 9-month high today in the crude oil market. So I think the reflationary trade still very much alive and kicking because of the fiscal stimulus bill primarily, and the brand new 2.5-year lows in the dollar, which has transpired into 5+ year highs in the Chinese currency. So I think the funds are playing mainly the macro and the reflation trade. So I'm thinking the small specs have been battling it out this week and last. Weather models are starting to say within the next 72 hours, the driest areas of Brazil are really going to see a shift in a rainier, cooler pattern that goes for 7 to 10 days. And to give you an idea, Mato Grosso is the big one to be watching, in my opinion. 72 hours out, they're looking at 0.6 to 2 inches. But by 7 days from now, they're looking at 2 to 4 inches with 80% coverage. And so I think when we come back Sunday, Monday, if that rain pattern is intact and those models are correct, the downside potential opens up unless we get the wheat market and the meal market underneath us, which is kind of a familiar theme when you and I talk.
Yeah, so support you're suggesting coming from the stimulus packages. Of course, Congress is thinking about one of those again, if they can get one passed in the lame duck session, a smaller one. And the Democrats are saying, the president-elect is saying, if we get this done, it's a down payment on the next one. Does this give support across the board under some of these commodities?
Well, it's got to happen. Otherwise, I think we're out over our skis on pricing too much premium into some of these assets. And so that's really the simple math of it for me, is it better happen. It's kind of like what happened when we were dealing with the early days of the trade battles with China and Mexico and Canada all at once under President Trump. And we kept hearing that this was going to get done within days, and then it didn't get in the market, priced in the premium, and then it didn't get done, and they took the premium out and then some. I'm afraid that we're in kind of a situation quickly appearing as we get towards the holiday of that same or similar type of scenario.
So you suggest that corn and wheat need to be supportive. What are the fundamentals that could prompt that?
Well, they should. I mean, they should be supportive. We did another corn sale of 182,000 tons to Mexico. We had, a marketing year high in actual shipments of corn on the weekly export sales. China was in as a buyer of U.S. corn on the sales this week. And I think the other thing, too, is we're still seeing a pretty strong basis in key areas of the country near ethanol plants. Decatur, obviously, a key feature, up 25 on the basis, plus 25 on the basis. Over in the wheat, this is where wheat has been, probably going to lose 3 or 4% on the week. Obviously, the wheat conditions didn't help us. The fact we didn't get any Egyptian business this week didn't help us. And the Stats Canada number really didn't help us, with almost an 8% increase in production there. Yet we see a drought monitor that only improved 2 points versus the previous week in the state of Kansas. And we've got a very 10-day dry pattern ahead in the hard red wheat belt. So my take, with especially Argentina being an issue for the corn now, I think there's irreparable damage being done in Argentine corn production right now as they go into pollination, Todd. So my take is corn, meal, and wheat should support at this stage of the game.
Hey, thank you. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. Have a great weekend, sir.
You too. That's Mike Zuzlow. He's at globalcomresearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Joined us on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Find it online at willag.org, willag.org. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Gary Schnitke is here to talk about his latest penning for the Farm Doc Daily website. He took a look at insurance coverage levels in the state of Illinois, in particular RP, or revenue protection. Thank you so much for being with us. How widely used is RP in the state of Illinois?
So RP is the most used product in Illinois, and it's used on 93% of insured acres. So as we're looking at what farmers have used in the past, it's mainly been RP. So, that RP product tends to be used on high coverage levels. So in Illinois last year, or this year, actually 2020, 44% of the RP acres were insured at 85% coverage levels. So 44% at the highest, 35% at 80, and 16% at 75%. So we got, those three coverage levels account for well over 90% of the acres insured in Illinois on RP.
Is there much of a difference from one part of the state to the other?
Yes. What we did was we tend to see higher coverage levels in northern and central Illinois. And just to give you a feel for that, we calculated an average coverage level across all those products. Just to give you a feel, in DeKalb County, extreme northern part of the state, one tier down from the top, from Wisconsin, had an 84% coverage level, which means that most of the farmers in that area are buying 85% coverage level. That goes down to lower levels in southern Illinois, and just as an example, Jefferson County, southern Illinois, where Mount Vernon is at, is 75%. So you can see that there's quite a difference.
How much does it cost?
So that is what defines the difference across this state. Farmers seem to even out their coverage levels choice so that they pick a product somewhere in the teens and $20 range. Just to give you a feel again, DeKalb County, northern part of the state, an 80% coverage level would typically cost $7 per acre. So most farmers in that part of the state take 85% levels, and their average premium is $12. Go down to Jefferson County. Their premiums on average cost $21 at an 80% coverage level. No 85% coverage levels were sold in Jefferson County. So we saw those farmers taking 75% coverage levels and 70 and 80 so that they have an average premium in that teen range again.
This year, farmers will have a new choice to make when they go in and sign up for crop insurance with USDA at the FSA offices. It's called ECO. Can you tell me about it?
Yeah, so ECO will offer farmers a coverage from either 90 to 95% down to 86%. Farmers can use that in conjunction with SCO to get coverage down to their coverage level of their selected product. ECO will make payments based on county yields and county revenue. So it's a different product than RP, which makes payments based on farm level yields. My guess is that we will see more of the use of RP in the northern part of the state, northern and central part of the state, where you have lower costs. So take that DeKalb County example. Farmers there are spending $12 per acre on RP. They could add an ECO, maybe $7 to $20 an acre on top of that. My guess, though, is that we'll see not many farmers take ECO just simply because of the cost and the county-level coverage offered by it.
Did you say it works in coordination with SCO?
Yes, it does, and farmers can use it in combination with SCO, ECO with SCO. Just to give you an example, let's say a farmer buys an RP at 80%. They can use SCO from 86% down to 80%, and then ECO from either 90 or 95% down to 86%. So farmers can get coverage from 90% down to their RP policy by using a combination of ECO and SCO.
Is SCO still subject to the ARC PLC decision, and is ECO subject to that same decision?
So SCO is, so you would have to purchase, or not purchase, but select PLC to make use of SCO. Farmers do not have to choose PLC to use ECO. And also, farmers don't have to use SCO in conjunction with ECO. They could purchase an ECO product and not take the SCO product.
So you could have a 5% no coverage area.
That's exactly right. If you purchased a 80% coverage level, actually you would have a 6% sort of band of no coverage. Having said that, though, you're buying two different types of coverage. So you're buying yield insurance or county insurance in the top band and farm level revenue insurance in the lower band. So they're not the same anyway. So dropping that band doesn't necessarily mean what you...
Right, and I said no coverage, and that's not true. It's just that there's an extra coverage in there that you would be paid on.
Yeah, and that they could choose to use or not choose to use.
So you think that across the state and across the nation, is my guess, that farmers have in mind that they want to pay $10 to $20, and if it falls in that range, they're likely to do it. And if not, if it's above that, they're unlikely to do it.
Yeah, I would say that's your typical farmer. There are farmers that will pay more than that, but you know, a lot of farmers will have a budget, and ECO will fall out of that budget. But by the way, if I were buying it, I would buy ECO and maybe skip SCO. ECO is going to pay on a more of a band than SCO would.
And so the band. Total band coverage for it would be 86% to 90 what?
ECO would go from 86% at the low to either 90 or 95%.
So between the comma, if you bought all three, you could cover 95% of your crop.
Yes. Again, you're getting county coverage at the top. So, you know.
Right, yeah. Right. But but with that, you could throw SCO out and still have really good coverage across the board.
Yeah. So just to give you a feel, we've ran some example premiums for Champaign County on ECO, and a 90 to 86% would cost something like $7 to $8. 95 to 86% would be $20, $21 per acre. So it gets kind of costly up at that level.
It'll be interesting to see how many people decide that they want to select that option, I suppose, and you'll be paying attention over time.
Yes, we will, and we will be providing more information about the ECO option, as well as this year we'll have the ARC PLC decision as well.
Hey, thank you so much, Gary.
You're welcome.
Gary Schnittke is an agricultural economist on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. You can read his article about RP and ECO on the FarmDoc Daily website at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. On this Friday afternoon, Eric Snodgrass is here from Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible to discuss the weather forecast. Hey, Eric, what a gorgeous day it is in our part of the world today. Thank you.
Yeah, we've got these lined up, too. And it's, to be honest, even though, you know, here we are headlong into December, it's been cold, but we got to remember something. It could be so much colder around here this time of year. And this pattern of relatively drier conditions and some clearer skies, and thankfully not nearly as strong of winds as we saw back in November, has been, you know, kind of a welcome change just from a comfort perspective.
It's been dry though, right?
Yeah, it's quite dry. In fact, the latest drought monitor, which was just released yesterday, now has a swath that kind of follows I-72 and then goes up into parts of central and northern Indiana that now is showing up in the second and third stages of drought. And just checking our soil moisture, you know, you look down to the, you know, the top 40 inches, and there are some places through central Illinois that are sitting, you know, in the 0 to 5% range. And that's going to take some time to recover, but we have time. And so it's something I'm watching very carefully.
And this dryness spreads back to the southwest?
Yeah, so that's been the area that you go back the last 6 months, the drought has been continuing to build and build and build. So they suffered through a large ridge over the summer that sat basically just parked along the West Coast. And so we've all heard, you know, of course, this whole summer, the stories about how dry it was, the prolific fires, the smoke, that was a lot of discussion. Well, normally this time of year, we'd start to see recovery in drought in the western part of the United States. And the problem has been that it's just gotten drier. So the latest drought monitor, if you look at the change maps, what they show is that the drought there has actually expanded and deepened. And so that just gets us thinking and starts to get some concern going about what this upcoming winter is going to give.
Yeah, not only the winter, but it gets people thinking about next spring and even next summer. And I think myself, so?
I agree too. And it's not to say that there isn't cause for concern. In other words, I think that people, you know, here in the United States, especially in the Midwest, when we see that much drought to our west, with some places in the Midwest having drought, what it needs to do to us, it just needs to keep us kind of on alert. And I don't want people really worrying, honestly, until I say to worry. And what I mean by that is, a lot of times in winter, you can have things shift around and toward the middle or end of winter really change the pattern and start to bring back up that western snowpack or bring back up the soil moisture values or set us up for a much better spring that can shrink that drought area. And to be honest, and I hate to say this because you don't want to put somebody against somebody else, but if the drought stays bad pretty far to the west, okay, like over the west coast, that actually bodes well for the midsection of the United States in the following growing season. Now, we don't want anybody to have drought, right? But we have to just watch the size, the shape of that drought, and its depth as we move forward. But I have a saying I've been using for the last several years, and I say this. I say, spring rains can undo all of winter's sins. So we got to watch it this winter, and then remember, if that pattern shifts and we develop a strong subtropical jet stream, that means the jet stream's flowing from Hawaii to California through Texas over to the Ohio River Valley. If that sets up, well, then all of a sudden we're going to go from what we have now, which is dry, over to a very active pattern, and my snowblower is going to get a workout.
Hey, but before we get to that, I was looking at next week's temps. Did I see the 50s, and where the devil's that warm air coming from?
Yeah, we might. I mean, it's going to be very mild for this time of year. So just think, we're moving toward the solstice, which would, of course, be the day that has the fewest daylight hours. And then that marks the beginning of winter. And we typically reach our coldest time period around here some point in January toward the very beginning of February. Which means normal temperature should be, this time of year, getting into the 30s, the upper 30s for highs. Okay, well now all of a sudden we got a week coming up here, going to see the sun quite a bit, and our winds are going to be from the north. Now, if I said your winds are coming from the north, most people are like, well, oh, it's going to be brutally cold, but there's a bunch of warm air over Canada right now, and that warm air into that huge ridge in the jet stream is actually just going to keep us, you know, mild for this time of year. It is a strange thing to say, but it's warmer in Canada, and that's where our warm air is coming from.
Hey, turn your attention way further to the south. Tell me about Brazil, Argentina, and crops in South America across the board.
Yeah, so we've been watching, of course, two different time periods of rainfall problems in Brazil. So really three. The beginning of the season was late. Then there was a dry spot for the beginning of November. And then it was dry again up until the last day or so. Now, over the next at least 7 days, they're going to have really good rains. I mean, it's going to be the monsoon plus. They're going to get plenty of precipitation in Brazil's main growing areas. It then backs off a little bit into week two, but there's a shift in the Western Pacific that I'm watching carefully. It deals with something called the MJO. Now, when we meteorologists talk about that, what you want to hear is, if I say MJO is in the phase 4, 5, 6, those three phases, it's usually very dry in Brazil. Well, the MJO is curling around and going over to phase 7 by the end of the month. So translation, all right? The models have increased precipitation amounts in Brazil's northern growing areas. So think Mato Grosso. It's still a little drier than average, but it's not as dry. And that's going to be seen as a positive sign. It's then very wet in Mato Grosso do Sul to Paraná and down to Rio Grande do Sul. That region and through there is going to get a lot of precipitation in the coming days. Where is it going to be dry? Well, the models are saying Argentina is now going over to dry. And to be honest with you, that's what I would have expected all along, given this La Nina. It's typically a drought creator in Argentina, not in Brazil. So we still sit on a knife edge here in Brazil with watching these rains come in. And they're at a critical point where they need it to return to normal to salvage, you know, what they hope to be a halfway decent crop. So any wiggles in that, any error that's too wet is going to be detrimental to the crop. So we're going to keep watching it together.
Anything from the long range data that gives us clues?
Well, I'm trying to look out into January and February. I'm very concerned about the strength of the monsoon at that point in January, February, because we expect the La Nina to peak at some point in January. After it begins to fade, my attention is going to turn to Argentina. And honestly, if that La Nina fades through our early spring, coming back to something we talked about earlier, that actually gives us a decent shot at seeing that subtropical jet stream for North America too. So a lot of moving pieces as usual, a lot of uncertainty, which is very normal in weather forecasting, but I've kind of given us a list of things that we can be monitoring together.
Hey, thank you. We'll have you monitor it for us. How about that?
That sounds good.
All right. That, of course, is Eric Snodgrass. He's with Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report. Commodity Week is up next in just a moment.